What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Okay, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Football here on the Friends from Work podcast network. I'm your host, Kyle Schoenewill, and today I wanted to hop on here and talk about something I'm very passionate about. Often I see storylines and narratives in the media and amongst fans online that I personally think are just verifiably false, but people don't know some of the behind the scenes. And so it drives me crazy and makes my blood boil. And the only defense that I know to these false narratives is to hop on Friends from Football and give you my perspective on some of these things. So as many of you know, Kirk Cousins, quarterback of the Atlanta Falcons, is a dear friend of mine. We've been friends since eighth grade, and we stay very close to this day. Recently, at his weekly press conference with the Atlanta Falcons, he was asked a question that is hotly debated amongst media and fans alike right now. It's this really nerdy football idea of pure progression versus reading defenses. If you didn't catch that clip, it went completely viral, millions of views. It was posted all over the internet, and everyone from media and former players alike, fans, etc., reposted this clip because it was such a cool little sneak peek into what it takes to play quarterback in the NFL. I actually texted Kirk and said, dude, your press conference is blowing up. He responded by saying, that's just the tip of the iceberg. We barely even got into it. And I can back Kirk on that, on it being just the tip of the iceberg. If any of you knew some of the stuff behind the scenes, it would blow your literal minds. That 2-minute clip is one tiny, tiny, tiny microcosm of what he has to do on a daily basis. I have sat with him and watched film. This is with a very, very, very cerebral NFL quarterback where he pointed out what he's thinking and what he's doing with a laser pointer on the screen, and it would blow your minds. The amount of protection calls and defense reads and all the different kinds of formations and the motions and why this play didn't work and why this play doesn't work from the get-go, or why it will work, or how much time is left on the play clock. How do I get out of the huddle in time? Do we need to check the play? Do we need to change the play? It's just an absolute insane amount of head knowledge that someone like Kirk has. And a 2-minute clip online is really fun for us fans to hear because it gives a glimpse, but it's nothing compared to how deep he has to go on a daily basis. And so it just really got me thinking about NFL quarterbacking, his career in general. You know, I've spent literal years trying to figure out the complexity of Kirk Cousins, the NFL quarterback, and rectifying some of the stuff about Kirk Cousins being an NFL quarterback with Kirk Cousins, my friend. And this has just been years and years of seeing narratives online that I disagree with, and then being bothered that y'all out there don't really know the truth of what's going on behind the scenes. And so today I want to make an argument that Kirk Cousins is the most polarizing player in NFL history. Obviously, I am biased with him being my friend, But really, when you look into some of the stuff and some of the narratives and some of the stats, it's pretty crazy. What do I mean by this? What I mean is, if you just walk into a coffee shop in miscellaneous town, let's say Houston, and you ask somebody, what do you think of Kirk Cousins? I think overwhelmingly, the average NFL fan's going to say, oh, I think he's fine, or he sucks, or yeah, I mean, he's okay. I'm not here to argue that Kirk is Tom Brady or that Kirk should go to the Hall of Fame. But if you had just asked an average person and they said, oh yeah, he's really quite good and he's made a long career for himself, then I could live with that, because that's pretty close to what the truth is. The reality is, there will be people that tell you he sucks when really that couldn't be further from the truth. And I think this clip last week going viral just kind of paints that picture of people being like, oh dang, he really does know what he's talking about. No, he might be the smartest pocket passing quarterback in the NFL currently today. Not a top 10, the smartest. A couple of years ago, Patrick Mahomes made some ripples when he said, a reporter asked, what are you trying to get better at? You know, you've won Super Bowls, you've been Super Bowl MVP. What does someone like Patrick Mahomes even have to improve on at this point? And his answer was, I need to get better from the pocket like Tom Brady and Kirk Cousins. And people freaked out. They're like, how in the world could he throw Kirk Cousins' name in there with Tom Brady? But it's because of what I'm going to tell you and how good Kirk is at some of these quarterbacky things that Patrick Mahomes has an argument there. And I have an argument that he might be the greatest pocket passing quarterback currently in the NFL today. So I just want to start with a few statistics, because to the average person in the Houston coffee shop that says he's just okay or average or he sucks, did you know that Kirk Cousins' completion percentage is seventh highest of all time? All time. Not currently, all time. Oh, Kyle, the league has changed. Okay, that's true, but seventh highest? You told me he was trash. Like I said, I would have accepted pretty good. Seventh highest of all time. Did you know that Kirk Cousins has the 12th highest passer rating of all time? Oh, but Kyle, passer rating is a flawed statistic. Okay, I buy that. But how come also on that list is Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, Dak Prescott, Tom Brady, Tony Romo, Kirk Cousins? So Kirk is surrounded by a bunch of guys. He's ahead of guys like Peyton Manning. He's ahead of guys like Phillip Rivers, Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, Kurt Warner, Matt Ryan, Ben Roethlisberger. I know the league has changed a little bit, but come on, 12th highest of all time. And yes, the Deshaun Watson and Jimmy Garoppolo things are frustrating because they didn't play very many seasons to be on that list. So if you could do a list where like you had to play X amount of years first or X amount of games, they'd probably fall off that. But 12th highest passer rating of all time. Again, to the guy in Houston, that's trash. Come on. Did you know that Kirk is currently 15th in career touchdown passes? 15th. Again, am I saying he's Tom Brady? Am I saying he's Hall of Fame? No. But that means the list right now is Brady, Brees, Manning, Rodgers, Rivers, or Favre, Rivers, Marino, Roethlisberger, Matthew Stafford, Matt Ryan, Eli Manning, Russell Wilson, Fran Tarkenton, John Elway, Kirk Cousins. Yes. In career touchdown passes, Kirk is ahead of Johnny Unitas, Joe Montana, Patrick Mahomes, obviously played longer, Sonny Jurgensen, Drew Bledsoe, Tony Romo, Steve Young, Donovan McNabb. Again, not saying he's the greatest ever, but the narrative has just never matched the reality. And so I've thought for years, why is that? Why does the average person just think he's okay when really he's approaching top 10 in almost every career number ever? And I've put together a list of reasons why I think that this narrative doesn't match up. The first thing I want to start with is that Kirk is the opposite of a YouTube or red zone quarterback. And what do I mean by this? For the average fan, let's say you're an Arizona Cardinals fan, you don't watch a lot of Kirk Cousins games. You're watching your team, and maybe you have red zone going, or you have YouTube highlights going. And so every once in a while, a play will pop up, Kirk throws a fade for a touchdown, and you go, okay, cool, they scored. But every once in a while, a Lamar Jackson highlight will pop up, or a Kyler Murray highlight will pop up, where they run around and they buy time for 10 seconds and then do a spin move and throw the ball over their head, and it leads to the receiver catching it off a tipped pass and running to the end zone. And you think, oh my gosh, the things that he can do. This is insane. Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson. You think these guys must be unbelievable. And don't get me wrong, I think they're good players. But you see that one highlight and you just kind of subconsciously assume that that is what they've been doing the whole game. In reality, Kyler Murray may have lost the game 28-7, and that was their only touchdown. How many throws actually did Kyler Murray miss in rhythm and timing that aren't shown on YouTube? But to the average fan who sees it, they go, wow, he's got arm talent. He can extend plays. He's talented. He's got to have a play somewhere. And I think that this is the number one reason why the league and teammates view Kirk so highly, whereas the media and fans don't. And that narrative, that gap in that narrative is so large. It's that the traits that Kirk is absolutely elite at are not the traits that fans and media value or can see. It's not easy to the untrained eye to see. But what he does matters more than the stuff that is easy to see. And so the league keeps paying him because they know he brings so much value. Teammates call him the GOAT because they know he brings so much value. Look what Bijan Robinson said about Kirk a couple of Thursdays ago. But fans don't know enough about ball to appreciate this stuff. It's why Sean McVay famously said about Kirk Cousins, those who know, know. If you know football, you get it. You know why he's so valuable. Kirk is unbelievable at being accurate, being decisive, and reading a defense from the pocket, going through his reads. One's unopened, two's unopened, three's unopened, boom, rip a dagger to four. That so few players can do. Even your favorite players right now can't do it as well as he can. He is elite at layering throws. So meaning he knows in the course of the play, he only has 2 seconds to read the defense, to read all this stuff, and yet even in that moment, he can make the decision to go, I'm going to throw this so softly to Kyle Pitts because he's wide open and I just don't want him to drop it. Or he can throw it just with enough touch to get over a sinking cornerback, but with enough drive to get it down before the safety gets over there. Or he's capable of just stepping into a slant and ripping it 100 miles an hour, probably more accurately 60 miles an hour. And so he has the ability to layer the throws at different levels, different velocities per the situation. Not everyone can do that. And so I was making a list of what is actually probably the most important traits that a quarterback can have. And I think that number one, it's being able to decipher a defense, make a decision incredibly quickly, and process that really fast, which he is one of the fastest processors in the world. Then I think maybe number two or maybe number three is, can you then deliver the ball accurately and layer these throws, which he's elite at? And then the third thing I think is leadership, which we'll get to in a second. And he has it in spades. And you saw just a tiny glimpse of that in that clip. So I think that the media and fans, they all obsess over arm strength, or can he throw the ball 70 yards downfield or 80 yards, or is it just 60? Can he throw a 35-yard out route from the other hash while on 1 foot? Can he sidearm a ball while falling down? Are those things cool? Absolutely. How often does it actually lead to being successful in a game? Almost never. Does it look good on YouTube? Oh, yeah, it does. But barely ever is it going to translate to a successful, efficient, productive offense. And I think fans are looking for athleticism. They're looking for the ability to extend a play, to find a receiver open late in a play, to be able to run away from a guy, to hurdle over someone. Is athleticism great? Yeah. I would love Kirk to be more athletic. His worst trait is he doesn't extend plays. But of the guys that extend plays, how many of them, I ask you this, miss the 7-yard slant in rhythm and timing because they can't read a defense. And so instead, they end up extending the play. And occasionally, it leads to a huge play, a home run, whereas Kirk in that situation maybe only would have hit a single. I get that. But how many singles does Russell Wilson miss because he doesn't see it in the rhythm of the play that Kirk is just hitting all the time, and accurately and decisive? And so, you know, with all this talk about athleticism, you need to be this dual threat quarterback. Show me where that's really working. If you look at the top passers today, it's a lot of guys that still operate from the pocket. I know there's a freak case here or there, but even the Lamar Jacksons of the world, the Josh Allens of the world, it hasn't translated to crazy team success yet. And I think those guys are great. I'm just saying the fans and the media overvalue arm strength and athleticism. The reality is you're never asked to throw the ball 80 yards in a game anyways. Kirk threw a ball for a home run a couple weeks ago, 55 yards in the air. That's as far as you ever need it to go. Plays don't develop that long. But as I said earlier, the accuracy, the decisiveness, the ability to read a defense, the ability to layer throws, and the leadership that goes on behind the scenes, fans don't see that stuff. It's not sexy. It's not flashy. And so they're not seeing the YouTube highlights of Kirk, and therefore they just think, oh, he must just be okay. So I think the number one reason that this narrative doesn't match up and that the gap is so large is that the traits that Kirk is amazing at are not very visible to the untrained eye. My second point is a more overarching point, something that a few friends of mine and I talk about a lot. We call this something narrative equity. Think of it as like a money jar. And every time you do something good, a little bit of money gets added to the jar. And when you do something bad, a little bit of money gets taken out. Now, some guys come into the NFL with a full jar already. They have a lot of narrative equity. Let's call it on a scale of 1 to 10. Some guys come in with a 10 for a whole lot of reasons we're going to get to in 1 second. Some guys come in with a 2. Maybe you're Brock Purdy and you're the last pick in the draft, or you're undrafted. And so you come in with a 1 or a 2 of narrative equity. And there's a lot of things that go into this narrative equity. But once you lose it, it's really, really, really hard to come back from it. This is the same reason why, let's say, Kyle Pitts, who was drafted 4th overall, the highest that a tight end has ever been drafted in the history of the NFL, gets such a long leash because he came in with so much narrative equity. When you're drafted 4th overall, sure, is there a pressure to perform? Yeah. But anytime you do something good, people go, see, that's why we drafted him 4th overall. He has the traits. He's clearly athletic. And yet he could suck for years and years and drop passes and do all kinds of wrong things. But people will go, well, like, he was the 4th overall pick. So he's got it in them. He's just got to figure it out. Whereas if you're undrafted and you're a tight end, your narrative equity is already so low that if you drop 2 or 3 passes, you'll get cut. You get no second chance because you were a 2 out of 10. Now you're a 1 out of 10 or a 0 out of 10 from 2 drops. Kyle comes in at a 9 out of 10. And so he can drop balls all day. And worst case, he's going to go to a 5 out of 10. So I think draft position matters. So the fact of the matter is Kirk came in as a 4th round draft pick. So he did not come in already with a bunch of narrative equity. Even in college, dude, he ended up being the most successful player in Michigan State football history, and he had to still fight for his job. They gave other quarterback scholarships before him, even when he won out the job, and even when his team voted him captain, they had a revote because the coach was like, surely this can't be right. He was fighting an uphill battle from day one. Then he gets drafted in the 4th round, so I think that comes in with lowered equity. But he gets drafted the same year as Robert Griffin III, which was an insane move and one that he didn't want, by the way. But now your narrative equity takes another hit. So if you came in as a 4 out of 10, now you're a 2 out of 10 because Robert Griffin III was the hero, the savior of Washington football. If you don't believe me, go back and look at some of those highlights from 2012. I mean, there was a moment where I was in Washington, D.C., and Robert Griffin had full murals painted on the sides of buildings in D.C. He would run out of the tunnel. The whole team would get announced, and then he would come out last. The music would come down, dun, 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 and he'd run out with an American flag, and he'd plant it at midfield. The place would go crazy. Everybody in that town, media and fans, wanted Robert Griffin to succeed, and Kirk was a threat to that. Even when he wasn't playing, a positive practice report was viewed as a negative amongst fans because it was challenging what Robert Griffin III was trying to do. When Mike and Kyle Shanahan started liking Kirk more, fans did not like that because they were so on Team RG3, Kirk was just a threat to them. I remember famously there were Washington Redskins at the time, joint practices against the New England Patriots. And at the end of the three practices, Bill Belichick was doing his post-game, or post-practice, I guess, media session. And he offered up, without being asked, by the way, Washington's not even playing the best quarterback on their own team. And that caused a lot of ripples, because how dare he say that? But this isn't Kirk's fault. He was just working hard, trying to be supportive, and yet his narrative equity had now fallen from a 4 to a 2. Thirdly, on the narrative equity front, Kirk had some pretty early primetime failures where everybody was watching. I can think of a horrific Thursday night football game in 2016, I believe. He started off his first season ever starting 2-4 before the You Like That game. And in 2017, they needed to win a game and he threw a pick on the last drive. And so pretty early on, he had some public failures that I think if those were the only three games you watched, and just let's face it, with national television games, there are more eyeballs on them. So if that was all you saw of Kirk Cousins, you made up your mind that he stunk. And so the narrative equity fell even further at one point to like a 1 out of 10. Now, since then, the primetime stuff and all that stuff is total BS. Like, he has totally erased all of those narratives, but he started at such a low point. It took a lot of winning to do that. In fact, and don't quote me exactly on this, but for example, he was famously like 0-8 on Monday Night Football, which people, you know, winning is not a quarterback stat, so it makes me so frustrated anyways. Kirk's teams lost those games. He played good in some of them. He played bad in some of them. But the reality was, if you're on Monday Night Football and you're in Washington, Washington stunk, and they were often playing very good teams on primetime. So it was hard to win with a bad team. Anyways, I digress. But in the last, like, it's something like in the last 5 or 6 years, he actually has like a top 5 best record on Monday Night Football. But no one would tell you that because that doesn't fit the media's narrative and the fan narrative. So, one, he came in with not much narrative equity. Two, he was drafted behind Robert Griffin III in a really controversial draft. Three, he had some pretty public failures early on. Four, his contract situation became very public. It started implanting into fans' minds that he was greedy or whatever, which is just like totally not the truth. Everybody in the NFL is trying to get paid. It's a job, right? And this is a whole nother tangent I could go on. But he offered a below market deal to Washington. They shouldn't take it. He wanted to be there. But the ownership at the time, Bruce Allen and Dan Snyder, didn't want him there for all these narrative things we're talking about. They had bought into his narrative equity being down. So they thought he just wasn't good. Well, and yet they thought he was good enough to tag him. But that wasn't Kirk's doing. He wanted to sign a deal there. He offered a $16 million a year deal, which how comically low does that sound now? And they wouldn't take it. So they tagged him. They tagged him twice. That's not him being greedy. They just couldn't make up their mind on him. Then what people forget is when he signed the first ever guaranteed deal in Minnesota, he turned down over $12 million more from multiple teams, including the New York Jets. That never gets talked about. He didn't break the bank with Minnesota. He took less money with Minnesota because he wanted to be there and he didn't want to be with the Jets. So if it was all about money, he could have chosen $100 million from the Jets. Then when this Minnesota-Atlanta thing came around, Minnesota told him that they would give him a one-year deal, no more than $40 million, and that they were going to draft someone in the first round, which they did, J.J. McCarthy. Meanwhile, Atlanta came in and said, we'll give you 2 years, $90 million, fully guaranteed, and we won't draft anyone above the second round. Liars, obviously. But what would you do? That's not greedy. That's just smart. Like, one team is telling you, we're only going to give you one deal, we're moving on. And by the way, that kind of became vindicated because Sam Darnold played awesome last year and they still moved on from him. So even if Kirk had stayed and had been amazing in Minnesota, they were going to move on. They drafted J.J. McCarthy. So it's not, I wouldn't even call it greedy. I would just say he changed teams because one team was coming on way stronger than the first one. But all of that contract stuff, because he was the first guaranteed contract, et cetera, was very public. And so Kirk, more than other quarterbacks, I remember he would be dropping back to pass in a game and they would say, Kirk Cousins, the $100 million quarterback, drops back. And I'd be like, why would you have to include how much money he made in the middle of a play, in the middle of a game where they're trying to win it? But it just got so implanted in people's minds that Kirk was the contract guy, that he was greedy. That's all he cared about. And so that hurt his narrative. Media and fans started saying, yeah, this is a guy that was drafted by an RG3. He was drafted in the fourth round, so he can't be that talented. He's failed on primetime a couple times, and all he cares about is money. And I just don't think any of those things were true. By the way, like in 2015, after the You Like That game, he was probably the best quarterback in the league after that point. And even after leading Washington to the playoffs, being one of the best quarterbacks down the stretch, Washington still wouldn't sign him for a fair market deal, which just kind of proves my point that when you're a fourth round pick and you're behind RG3, you have to do so many things right to convince Washington to sign you versus if you're a first round pick, any glimpse of hope you get signed. Like for example, Trevor Lawrence, everyone wants him to be so good and he's actually having a good year this year. But the year that Trevor Lawrence got paid and the year that he went to the Pro Bowl was like an average year for Kirk. But because he's a first round pick, it was like, oh, look, he's got it in him. See, this is the talent he can grow on. And look at if there's 10 throws and on 9 of them, Trevor misses, but on 1 of the 10, it's an amazing throw. Oh, that's me exaggerating. But if 6 of the throws he misses and 4 of the 10 he hits on and they're amazing, people go, see, those four, like, that's why we drafted him in the first round. He's got the talent. Whereas if Kirk hits 7 of the throws and only misses 3, on the 3 misses, people go, see, that's why he's a fourth round pick. That's why he's not worth paying. Because of this one time we lost a game. He can't win in the playoffs, even though throws for 350 yards, no turnovers, 3 touchdowns against the Giants. He has the 31st ranked defense, giving up a gajillion yards to Daniel freaking Jones. But they lose the game, and the story is, see, Kirk doesn't play well in the playoffs. He played unbelievable in the playoffs, but the team lost. Narrative equity. And then lastly, I think the last tiny portion of the narrative equity thing was COVID. All the drama that surrounded Mike Zimmer and Kirk during the COVID era, which was such a weird time for all of us, only dragged his name through the mud, and people started hating him. And he had to work back from that. It was such a weird time. Gosh, I don't even want to talk about that part. But just so dumb how that just kind of like just started snowballing and it was kind of out of control. So that's kind of a short version of my defense as to why I think he's going to go down as one of the best quarterbacks of all time, like one of the 50 best, let's say. Like statistically and, you know, all these fourth quarter comebacks and his jersey's in the Hall of Fame for the largest comeback of all time. He came back from 33-0. He had 8 comebacks in a year, tying the record. All of this, there are going to be teams that still seek him out. Sean McVay, when he signed a jersey for Kirk, wrote on it, Kirk, I owe my career to you. It's the reason why Kyle Shanahan and Mike Shanahan talk so highly of him. It's the reason why Ben Johnson still shows clips of Kirk running a play because he can get through his progressions, and yet why fans think, oh, he's just kind of okay, and who knows. It's also the reason why he's going to still play somewhere probably next year and get paid by someone, because they know, those who know, know. And why fans are going to be like, how does he keep doing this? How is he still playing? Well, he's still playing because he can do the stuff I'm talking about, and you just don't see it. He threw for 508 yards last year in a win. Just 2 weeks ago, he threw for 373, three touchdowns in a comeback win with no receivers. David Sills, Drummond, Tompkins. These are his receivers, y'all. The Falcons aren't good. The play calling's not good. And he still threw for 373 yards and three touchdowns. You don't just do that. People don't just do that. But yeah, it's a fascinating discussion in the NFL right now about the progressions and pocket quarterbacks versus athletic quarterbacks, etc. If you're interested, look into this stuff more. There's all kinds of things you can find on the topic. Dive into the film. Look at how many times Kirk has a play that his first three reads are to the right. He's looking right. He decides that's not going to work. Looks right again. Option two is not going to work. Option three is not going to work. And somehow in under 2.5 seconds, shifts his hips, gets back to option four running over the middle, and just drills him and gains 12 yards hitting the fourth option. Go watch film and see how many times that happens. Go watch film and see if anyone is running open and he's not hitting them. Even currently, go watch the film against Seattle where he was, quote, terrible. He was 15 of 30. Go watch that film. You tell me, did they lose that game because he was terrible? Absolutely not. There were drops. There were crazy good pass defenses. Wide receivers are not getting separation. I think that Kirk is still playing and looking as comfortable and as sharp as he ever has. Just the Falcons suck. And this is why I think he's going to end up playing somewhere. And I can't wait for you all to see what he looks like when he's not with Zach Robinson and the Falcons and what it could look like. I still think these traits that he has of being decisive, accurate, manipulating the defense, getting through his progressions and his reads are still so elite. Heck, this is why Phillip Rivers even has a job. Do all these younger quarterbacks have arms that are better than Phillip Rivers? Absolutely. But the Colts would still rather go with a 44-year-old grandpa. He's a freaking grandpa. They'd rather have their offense go with him because he can get through progressions and reads, and the average NFL quarterback doesn't go through them all. Kirk is the best in the NFL at that, and no one's going to talk about it, and no one knows it. Kirk Cousins, the most polarizing player in the history of the NFL. Thank you for listening. We'll see what happens the rest of this year and where he plays next year. But I appreciate you all out there. Merry Christmas, and I hope you guys have an excellent holiday break. We'll see you next time here on Friends from Football.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.